Okay, so welcome everybody. My name is Stephen Downs, Miamo Stephen Downs. It's a pleasure to be here talking to you by Google Hangout to Chile today. We have 5 viewers on the YouTube broadcast, and we're also broadcasting on Ed Radio, where at last check I have 0 people, such is life. The topic for my presentation today is supporting MOOCs online. A MOOC is a massive open online course. It's the word MOOC is the abbreviation for that. And I, along with my colleagues, have been offering MOOCs for a number of years now. Our first was in 2008. It was called Connectivism and Connective Knowledge. And since then, we've offered quite a number through the University of Manitoba and Athabasca University. There have been a lot of new MOOCs that have started up in recent years, or recent weeks, I guess I should say. For example, the Coursera, MITx, the Stanford AI course, and more. So I want to talk about the way we structure our MOOCs and the way we organize the online support for those MOOCs using the Grasshopper tool that I've developed in order to do this. It's not necessary to use Grasshopper to support a MOOC. You can use other tools. But I put it in terms of Grasshopper because that is what we use and it's easiest for me. What I want to talk about is MOOC online support. And I'm going to contrast that to begin with a traditional course online. And as you can see here, at least I hope you can see here, yes, the traditional course online, and this includes the new massive open online courses that have been offered, are based around a single website. These online courses require that the students go to the red website and register. All the content will be found on the website, all the dialogue and discussion, and even the live online sessions will be found on the website. The MOOCs that we have offered are different from that. From our perspective, a MOOC is a web and not a website. Now, we still have a bit of a website because we require some online presence to support a MOOC online. But the emphasis is on creating this thick web of communication between participants. We know that our MOOCs are successful when people are speaking more among each other than they are speaking to us at the central website. What we want to see is the dialogue and interaction spreading out from the beginning, from the central course. The way we support this using online technologies is to support an authoring process. First, the student or a course participant will create a resource of some sort. This can be any sort of resource at all. Typically, it's a blog post or a Twitter post or a comment in a discussion. in some MOOCs, people are asked to create graphics and videos and animations and whatever. After they've created the resource, they send information about the resource to our online site. They can send it to other places as well, of course. But our support kicks in when they send information to us. Once that information comes in to us, what we do is we send information to other course participants. Our primary means is to use an online newsletter that you can receive by email, by RSS, or by going to the website directly. Over time, we want to support more broadcast options, including Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, if Google ever lets us send content to our Google Plus account. So the second person receives this information, and this information contains a link to the resource that the first student created. So the second student goes directly to the resource on the other student's website, or on the other student's, I don't know, Facebook account, Flickr account, wherever. Notice that now we have succeeded in moving the interaction between the two students off the course website. This is a deliberate strategy. Now, it means we can't track this necessarily, but, you know, our purpose isn't to track these interactions. Our purpose is to create these interactions and to enable these interactions to take place autonomously and independently of our central course structure. And then finally, what very often happens is the first student has linked to some other student or some other resource. So the second student now goes directly from the first student to that other resource. They can click on the other resource, and now their activity, their interaction, is two steps removed from the online MOOC website. So you see, the idea here is that the site is only a catalyst. It's only a method of supporting these online interactions to get them to take place. The objective of our MOOCs is not to bring everybody into one place. It's to create this web of communications between people. We can look at it from a student's perspective. And so here we have the student's perspective. If you're a student in one of our massive open online courses, the website is just one of the remote sites that you interact with. You also interact with each, well, not necessarily with each, but with any number of other students directly. Additionally, when you're interacting with these other students and with the website, you may be connected to external resources. Through the website, for example, you might be given access to images or to videos. Through another participant, you'll be given access to blog posts and perhaps more videos, more images, maybe some delicious feeds or whatever. The idea here is that you, as a participant in a MOOC, are at the center of this ever-widening web of people and other resources. From your perspective, it's like the entire course is just one or two jumps away. But of course, you're seeing a much larger web from your individual perspective. This is really important in our design of a MOOC. We don't want everybody to see the same thing. We don't want everybody to read the same resources. We believe that students get the best value out of a MOOC when they are able to talk to and communicate with the people they want to access the resources that they want to, the resources they find most relevant, and to create their own individual perspective on the topic or the subject being studied. From the course provider perspective, now, it looks a little bit different. Here's the course provider perspective. We are at the center, or the website. But we're not the place where everybody comes. Rather, as the arrows indicate, we're kind of like a train station or a bus station where people and contents come through. Right off the bat, as I've mentioned, we have the student content that comes in. Also, the providers of the course, that's us again, may upload course content, such as slide presentations, documents, images, videos, and more. But the content doesn't just sit on the site. It is sent out to the participants who are subscribed. And these participants are supported with a login so that they can give us their email address and tell us what their preferences are. Our online courses also have live online events. We've used a wide number of interactive services to support our online courses. We've used Blackboard Collaborate, or as it used to be known, Illuminate. Right now, I'm using a Google Hangout. We've used WiseIQ. We've used BigBlueButton. We've used Adobe Connect. We've used Skype. We've used LiveStream and Ustream, and the list goes on. We find it very important to take recordings of these events because a recording of an event is a way of producing a new resource. We find more people listen to the recordings or view the recordings if we have video than they do actually attend the live event. And all of these are fed back into the site where they're fed on again to the students. So the online support that we want to provide isn't so much a place where we host content, although we do a little bit of that, but a way of rooting content and sending the information to people so that they can access it no matter where it is around the world. As I mentioned, we have an application called Grasshopper to manage this for us. Grasshopper is a piece of software that I wrote myself. It performs functions that you can find in many other applications online as well. The major functions it performs are as follows. First of all, it has a harvester. The harvester is the piece of software that brings content in from remote sites. The content is encoded in XML or other formats like RSS or JSON. The content may consist of blogs, discussions, web pages, or whatever. Or it may originate in Twitter or Facebook or some online service. The harvester is managed using a feed manager. I keep track of each feed. Each student has one or more feeds where they tell us where to find their external resources. All of that is managed in the site manager, and that's where we also keep our course pages, keep our events, and also set up the online newsletter. The website also contains elements of user management, and it's the sort of thing you would expect with login and authentication. It's also where participants can manage their newsletter subscription and where they can upload their social network information. And then finally, the piece that makes all of this work is the distribution. We have our email letter, of course. We have RSS, Atom, and JSON feeds, and the API to send our content into Twitter and Facebook and all the rest of it. Now, what I'd like to do is actually show you some of that software so that you can see it for yourself. And so I'm going to open up on my web browser the functionality, the Grasshopper application. So let's see how this goes. It's going to bounce around on me now. Don't do that. There we go. All right. So this is my browser. This is the administration screen for Grasshopper. This is the screen for my own personal website, which is where I send OL Daily, which is my regular newsletter. We'll ignore that reset key. Oops. I should make that as a password type, shouldn't I? But then you'd never know what it is. Anyhow, I'll just change that after this presentation. I also have similar sites. For example, for the MOOC newsletter, here's the site for the MOOC newsletter. It looks a little bit different, but it's the same sort of concept. We also have an online course taking place right now, and that's the Openness in Education course. And again, you can see the basic course information. But I'll go back to my own page. So here's the harvester. The harvester right now on my website is turned off, but I can turn it on easily. And what the harvester does is aggregate each web page. Oh, I'm getting some wild feedback. Okay, that's the end of that feedback. If we look into my feed list, you can see here are the feeds that are submitted to an online course. And I can look at any one of these feeds. So each individual student would submit a feed, and it usually has a name, and it has an XML link. So here's what that student's feed looks like. So this is the XML version of their feed, and they're producing that from their own blog. So here's the blog. So we see the blog, and then we see the feed, and then we see it inside my website. So my website gathers this content and stores it all as a list of links. And so here we see the list of links that have been aggregated using the harvester. Now, I have a way of managing all of the users online. I can turn registration on and off. I can find users, I can import users, and so on. And this is the way I take care of all the subscriptions. The newsletter itself is a page on the website, and I'll show you the OL Daily page. So I'm just going to scroll down to it here. And so OL Daily, here it is. It's an email type of page, and so I'm going to edit it to have a look at it. And it's fairly ordinary. This is the code that produces the newsletter, and what this does is it tells the newsletter where to find the information, how to format the information, and the rest. Here are the publishing options. So I can save this as a web page. And here are the newsletter options that determine how the newsletter is sent out. We can view the current version of the page. So here's what OL Daily looks like right now. And as you can see, there's only one link so far. Through the course of the day, I'll add more links. The newsletters for our online courses work exactly the same way. They are pages on the website, and they're turned into newsletters, and then they're sent out by email and by RSS to the subscription list. Whoops. I don't know what that noise is. It's not very nice. What I'd like to do now, just to finish my presentation, is to talk a little bit about the underlying principles of this software and of our open online courses generally. So, I left off with Grasshopper functionality. This functionality is based on four basic underlying principles: autonomy, diversity, openness, and interactivity. Probably the most important to us is autonomy. This is the idea that students or participants manage their own education, but we don't manage it for them. We provide infrastructure, we provide resources, we provide communication between people, but we don't tell people when to learn and how to learn, or even what to learn. This is up to them. So we give them a choice of content. We give them the opportunity to learn in their own way, according to their own learning style. And we don't provide a core curriculum for the course. Now, that does not mean we provide zero resources. We actually provide many resources, more resources than they want. But they're free to pick and choose from those resources as they wish, or they can choose and find their own resources, and actually we really encourage that. The second principle is diversity, and this is essential to us because if you have autonomy, you're automatically going to get diversity. But it becomes something that our environment has to explicitly support. We're looking at people using multiple tools, hundreds of different websites,
WordPress,
bloggers,
Postgres,
and the rest.
And the rest.
And we're also looking at varied content.
Openness
is the third principle. We want to support open access, open content, open activities, and open assessments. And finally, interactivity. This is not just encouraging communication, but it's the idea that the content and the learning comes not from one source, but from everybody, and is what we call emergent knowledge. It's what happens when we all communicate together. Each time we offer a course, we don't try to teach the same old thing that we all knew before, but rather together we try to learn new things. So that overall is the presentation that I wanted to give. And so I'll pass it over to you now to see if you have any comments or if you have any questions.
Dice que escucha. Okay, I'm giving some instruction to the audience in order to make question for you. Okay.
Okay.
They wrote some question in papers. So Lisette, one student of English student, is going to give you the question. Okay, the first one.
Okay.
Hi. What do you think are the factors that make successful the MOOC?
I think the primary factor that makes a MOOC a success is the sharing of content and ideas that takes place among the participants. If people who join a MOOC simply sit back and wait for content to come to them, the MOOC will not be very interesting. The MOOC becomes really interesting when people start to create things and exchange ideas and contribute to the content of the course.
Okay, a second question is Grasshopper an open source?
Yes, Grasshopper is open source. It's available on my website. It's also on SourceForge.
Okay, people is writing another question.
Okay.
If you have any question for the no. Okay. Estaba preguntando una de las si esta plataforma para enseñar estos cursos masivos son plataformas abiertas, libres, que se pueden descargar. Él dice que está disponible en su website. Ahora yo no sé si eso es la plataforma libre con un registro de usuario o se puede descargar para una montarla en su propio servidor. Entonces, another question is about your platform. We are using in our university a platform like Moodle. I know you know Moodle, but it is possible to give a MOOC, a massive open online course using Moodle. What should be do to create a Moodle, a MOOC using Moodle? Si con Moodle se puede hacer algún MOOC o un curso masivo como el que él está presentando ahora.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult because MOOC wasn't designed for this purpose. We have, sorry, Moodle was not designed for this purpose. We have used Moodle in the past, but Moodle is one of those services that encourages everybody to go to the website and sign on and do all of their activities in the one place using the same content and the same interface. What you would want to add to Moodle to make a MOOC work is especially a way of aggregating or harvesting content from remote services, from student websites, from their blogs, from their Flickr account or YouTube account, and their social networking account, so that a person would not actually have to use the Moodle environment in order to take part in the course. A second problem we found with Moodle is that students had to be signed into Moodle to see the content. And so it's important to set up Moodle, if it's to be an open course, such that all the course contents are available openly without having to sign in to view them. Now, I can't recall offhand whether that's possible in Moodle. I know we experienced difficulties with this. This is especially important for things like the in-class discussions, if they are to be viewed by people who are not signed into the course. Because the whole idea about open online courses is not simply that the contents are accessible, but in a way, you want the contents to be portable. You want to be able to move the content from place to place. So, for example, you want to be able to take the content of a Moodle discussion and be able to embed it on a remote website. One of the things that we did with Moodle when we used Moodle was we set up the Grasshopper aggregator to harvest RSS feeds from the Moodle discussion and include them in the newsletter. It wasn't a straightforward thing to do. And I think that's the last and most important aspect. You need to have a way to set up Moodle to distribute what's happening in the course by email or by RSS to send the information out to participants without requiring that they remember every day or whenever to log in and go back to Moodle and look at the course.
Okay, thank you.
Question about the educative model. It says if you are forming a new educative model for the universities, it's because you want the universities follow this model, or you are trying to the universities lead a normal education and it start to use the online certification?
The first and most important thing is I'm experimenting, right? So I'm not telling anybody that they should or should not use this model. But certainly universities have many different options available to them. They could use this model, They could use a traditional learning management system model. They could use the model suggested by Coursera and Udemy and the like. They could create learning objects. They can post online videos and resources the way MIT did. All of these are open to universities. The underlying principle behind this model that I think should apply to universities in the longer term is openness. To me, it's really important to make a higher education available to everybody in society, so that all people in society have at least the chance to access that learning, to make it something of their own, and to take it forward to their community or their workplace or wherever. That's not something universities do well right now. The universities create barriers for people. The traditional form of learning online creates barriers for people. I want to see those barriers removed. And to me, the MOOC is the best way to remove those barriers right now. Open online learning is the best way to make the knowledge we have in universities available to everybody in the world. And that, more than any particular model, is what my objective is here.
Bien, lo que dijo en general es que las universidades son libres de elegir su modelo educativo, que es lo que está haciendo es más bien un experimento, y que esto del aprendizaje online es una muy buena herramienta que podría implementarse, pero que cada universidad decide cómo trabaja.
Bueno, estos cursos masivos quizá no los logramos dimensionar bien, y le preguntaré si son muy masivos o qué significa la masividad. We would like to know, when you say massive online courses, are you talking about 100 of people, 1 million, 1,000? How many people? Do you have any successful cases or courses that you have had to tell us?
Our first open online course had 2,200 people in it.
Wait a minute, we can hear you. Give us 1 second.
Sorry, my fault.
Okay.
Our first open online course had 2,200 people in it. The change course that we just finished had about 2,600 people in it. Numbers have varied between about 800 and 2,600. So those are the numbers that we have worked with. The Stanford AI course, which was a different model, went out to something like 160,000 people, of which about 30,000 completed. So in one sense, massive means very significant numbers. On the other hand, some massive open online courses have been offered to much fewer people. And indeed, right now, there's one out there that the course provider calls a LOOC, a little open online course, and it's only got 20, 25 people. Personally, I think that might be too small, because the value of the course is derived not from the course content, but rather from the interaction between people. If I had to pick a minimum number, I would probably pick a number like 150. And this number is actually, it's Dunbar's number. And this is sort of like an inverse Dunbar's number. Dunbar proposed that the maximum number of people that you could know online or in person is 150. That any person's own local community will be 150 people. But a MOOC is successful when it takes you beyond your local community and into a wider network where you are interacting with people you don't know. So the minimum number for that would be 150. If you have 160, then you're guaranteed at least 10 people you don't know. Of course, for practical purposes, you could actually make a smaller MOOC and still encounter people you don't know. But there's the danger that a smaller MOOC becomes a group where everybody knows everybody. Everybody starts saying the same thing. Everybody starts seeing the world in the same way. And you want to avoid that. But the other side of massive does not refer to the number. It refers to the way the course is structured. And for any given MOOC, it doesn't matter what the actual number is, but rather that the course is structured in such a way that it could support a massive number of people. It's this structure that's important. And it becomes possible to support a massive number of people only when you remove from direct control the course originators or the course authors. For example, if the professor must speak to each and every person individually for half an hour, then you cannot create a massive course because no professor could ever do that. If you structure the course such that participants speak to each other rather than to the professor, then the course can be as big as you want. So it's this structure that makes a course a massive course, not the number of people that actually end up signing up for it.
Bien, primero habló de la masividad en cuanto a números, de 2.000, 3.000, 4.000 personas, pero en general el curso se refirió que la cantidad de personas dentro de su experimento son más o menos 150 personas. Este tipo de cursos online es más exitoso en Europa, por lo que dijo, y además la masividad no se refería tanto al número de personas involucradas en el curso, sino que a la estructura de este curso online en sí, que al ser de fácil acceso, las personas interactúan con gente que no conocen, hay mucha más facilidad de intercambiar información, y eso hace que el curso sea masivo.
Okay. Well, it's 1 o'clock in Chile. I know that it's 1 o'clock in Canada too. And we want to thank you a lot because you have the time to give us this talk. And queremos darte un fuerte aplauso acá desde Chile. And if you have any final word for us, please.
Muchas gracias. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you. And to me, this is what education should be about. being able to reach out across the world and communicate directly with each other. So thank you very much. I really appreciate all of you taking the time out of your classes and your lives to listen to me. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, and thank you for sharing your point of view of this new model of education. And see you on internet, because I know you are recording this talk, right? So it will be available on YouTube, okay? Yep. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Digan adios. Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Adios. Adios, amigos.
Bueno, muchachos, ustedes no sé cuánto captaron, pero la idea es tener experiencias de este tipo, hacerles también sentir que el inglés es una herramienta muy importante y tienen que dominarlo, ¿ya? Agradezco también al Liceo.